Glad to be with you today. We have a lot of visitors here. Saw people just keep coming in, and we're sure glad that you're here, and it helps to offset some of the people who are of our own number that are traveling, and we want you to feel welcome and hope that you'll get your Bibles and open to study with us. If you want to turn to Genesis chapter 23, in just a moment I'll read a couple of verses from that and to sort of initiate our study. We have a TV program every Monday night in Lowell, and at least in the first part of the program, we've been studying the faith of Abraham and sort of talking about what a man of faith was. And so we've spent quite a few months looking at his life and his character and all the things that he did that really makes a great model for us about what it means to have faith. But I was sort of thinking about, not tomorrow night, but a week from tomorrow when we have our next, our study in Genesis 23. And I was kind of reading through that yesterday, or a couple few days ago, and it struck me about somebody I haven't talked about very much in that study. And that study tells us about Sarah, who was Abraham's wife. And it tells us about her death. And the first two verses, I just want to read a couple of verses of this chapter. It says, Sarah lived 127 years. These were the years of the life of Sarah. And Sarah died in Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham went in to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. The rest of the chapter is really about Abraham's efforts to purchase a piece of property there in order to have a place to bury his wife. It's the only place in the Bible where we actually have the age recorded of a woman who died. And Abraham, the thing that really kind of, even when you study this chapter, really grabs your attention is that Abraham sort of makes an exception to the rule. He actually purchases a piece of property in Canaan. He's lived as a sojourner and an alien. He hasn't owned anything, not a stitch of land. But when Sarah dies, he negotiates to buy a piece of property so he'd have a place to bury her. I think it showed a lot of, probably the main point is that he showed a lot of faith in God that one day that would be his land. That his wife would be buried there. Later, Abraham would be buried there at the same place. Later, Jacob would bury Leah there. And Joseph would ask that his bones be brought back to the same place. Sort of a statement of faith that one day that would be their land. But you know, another point that I thought about a lot is that Abraham was honoring his wife. He purchased that piece of property to have a place to bury her. And he came there to mourn and to weep over her. Sarah is held out to us by Abraham and in the New Testament in Hebrews chapter 11 as a woman of great faith. And I didn't spend much time thinking about Sarah in my study in Genesis in the last few weeks. But I thought this morning, let's think about her just a little bit. I want you to think about Sarah because she becomes a great model for us. And in the passage that was read in our scripture reading, she's brought up again by Peter. And if we were to pay a special tribute to Sarah this morning, on what grounds would we pay that tribute? Would it be because she was a great professional? Because she was a go-getter? Was it because she was a woman with high achievements in society? It would have to be on the grounds that God paid tribute to her, because she obeyed her husband and she was submissive to him. That doesn't get a lot of approval or applause in our society, but it's the basis upon which she received a mark of honor and tribute in the Bible. And I want to think about the life of Sarah. And what kind of challenge it would have been, what kind of walk of faith she had to have in the position she was given as Sarah, as Abraham's wife. There are some hard things about Sarah's life. She was barren. First thing we learn, if you go back to Genesis chapter 11, the first thing I learned about her when she's introduced us in the Bible, go back to Genesis 11, we're going to spend a little bit of time there. We're going to talk about her life, some of the challenges she had, and then we'll make some applications at the end. But the first thing we learn about Sarah in chapter 11 and verse 30 is that she was barren. Yeah, it's just about the most the most honorable thing a woman could have in the Bible times was a child. That's what gave her her honor and her glory. And Sarah had not any children. In addition to the sense of security, which every woman wants, she wanted a child. All of this is about to change for Sarah. And God calls Abraham in chapter 12. And he told him something. He told him he needed to leave everything behind. Look in chapter 12, verse 1. It says, "The Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country, from your relatives, from your father's house to the land I'll show you. I'll make you a great nation. I'll bless you, make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. I'll bless those who bless you, curse the one who curses you, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." We give a lot of attention to Abraham at this point. Give a lot of attention to his faith. He left his home, left everything behind, left his family, or left his place where he worked, all of his, you know, the place of where he grew up. He went out not knowing the details of where he was going. Didn't know how long he was going to be there. But what about Sarah? What about Sarah? She had to leave everything behind too, didn't she? She had to leave her homeland. She had to leave her place of security. What about Sarah? Imagine Abraham saying, "Well, pack your things. I heard a voice from God." As far as I can tell, he didn't talk to Sarah about the issue. He talked to Abraham. I would suggest that it would be very hard to be in the position of submission. Sarah, packing her things, not knowing where she was going, not knowing the details. You know, most of us have moved different places, but we at least tell everybody, tell our wives where we're going. We talk it over with them. They may not like it, but we at least have a conversation. But Abraham didn't know where he was going. He just heard this voice of God. I don't know if she heard the voice of God. Maybe she thought he was imagining it. I don't know, but she had to leave everything to follow her husband. And that could not have been easy. It is a very hard position to be in, to be in a position of submission. But the journey began, and her journey of faith began. And it says in verse 4 and 5, "Abram went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. And Abram took Sarah his wife, and Lot and his nephew, and their possessions which they had accumulated, and the persons which they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. And thus they came to the land of Canaan." So she followed God's voice, and she followed her husband's lead, and she trusted he would care for her. And any woman here who has been baptized into Jesus Christ has began her life of faith too, where she says, "I will follow the voice of Jesus, and I will do what he says wherever he takes me, and I will trust in my husband, and I will follow his lead." And that was a huge test of faith, I would suggest to you. Very hard to leave your home and your family and your security. But that didn't even really touch the hem of the garment for Sarah. That was just the beginning. Sarah's faith also had to be tested when her husband's faith was weak. She had to submit to him when he was weak in his faith. You get to chapter 12 in the latter part, we remember the story. There was a trip to Egypt that was made, verse 7 and follow, or verse 10 and following. There was a famine in the land. Abraham didn't consult the Lord. He trusted in his own plans. He decided he could resolve that economic crisis his own way, so he went to Egypt. And based on verse 12 and 13, he wasn't thinking a lot about Sarah's well-being, but he was thinking about himself. When he said, "It will come about when he came near Egypt that he said to Sarai, his wife, 'See now, I know that you're a beautiful woman,' and it will come about when the Egyptians see you that they will say, 'This is his wife,' and they will kill me, but they'll let you live. Please say to that you are my sister, so that it may go well with me because of you, and that I may live on account of you." Who was Abraham thinking about? Wasn't thinking about Sarah. He was thinking about saving his own neck. And so, I feel sorry for Sarah here. Don't you? Kind of a situation of insecurity. be taken to Egypt, and then to without consulting the Lord, and then to be put in a position where maybe your life is at risk. I don't know that she was in agreement with Abraham on this issue of being called his sister. We know the story. The king took her, and she's already in a foreign country before, but now she's in the hands of a pagan king. What did she think that day? Did she say, what was he thinking about when he went down here? Obviously not about me. He's saving his own neck, but what about my fate? What about that voice of God? Is this how God cares for me? You know, just imagine what may have went through Sarah's mind. To be in a position of submission is a hard thing. And even harder still, to follow her husband when spiritually he was really not on track. But it's important to read in this section, verse 17 through 20. But the Lord struck Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this you've done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she's my sister so that I took her for my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and go. And Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they escorted him away with his wife and all that belonged to him. Sarah's brought out into the forefront, isn't she? Abraham's rebuked by this pagan king, which was an embarrassing thing to say the least. But who was it that was caring for Sarah? God was caring for Sarah. And he provided a way for her to be delivered out of that situation. But she followed him. She submitted to him, even when his faith was weak. Well, they made it back to Canaan. Chapter 13 and verse 1 says, Abram went up from Egypt to the Negev, he and his wife and all that belonged to him, and Lot was with him. And Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver and gold. He came out of Egypt a rich man. I wonder if God did that for Abram's benefit or for Sarah's benefit. But they came back, and Abram sort of gets his faith back in line. He makes an altar, begins to worship the Lord again. But Sarah still struggles. When we get to chapter 15 and 16 in the book of Genesis, the issue of the child comes back to the forefront. First, it was the issue of the land. And was God going to take care of him in the land with the famines and such? But the issue of the child comes back to the forefront in chapter 15. And Abram says, O Lord God, what will you give me since I am childless? Verse 2. And the heir of my house, will it be Eleazar of Damascus? And Abram says, since you've given me no offspring, then the one born in my house will be my heir. And the Lord said, no. He said, this man will not be your heir, but one who shall come forth from your own body. He shall be your heir. So God reaffirms his promise to Abraham. Says that it's going to be from his own body. But Abram is still, Sarah is still barren. She's still in, she's got no evidence of her own that she's going to be able to produce this child. And so chapter 16, verse 1, 2, and 3, Sarah tries her own wisdom out. She has an idea. Maybe God needs a little help. Maybe we need to be participants in this activity. So Sarah, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, verse 1 says, and she had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. So Sarah said to Abram, now behold, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Please go into my maid. Perhaps I shall obtain children through her. And Abram listened to the voice of Sarah. And Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan. And Abram's wife Sarah took Hagar, the Egyptian, her maid, and gave her to her husband Abram as his wife. So Sarah's got a plan. Surrogate motherhood. Maybe that'll work. And it's been 10 years. You know, that's reasonable. He's 85. I'm 76. We've got to be proactive here. Can't just sit around. Waiting on God is not achieving anything. And so we need to take charge. You know, some women would admire that spirit and that attitude. Well, Sarah's plan worked. There was a child born. But it didn't turn out really like she hoped. Ishmael was born, But it wasn't a happy home. Verse 4 through 6. It says, and he went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress, that would be Sarah, was despised in her sight. And Sarah said to Abram, may the wrong be done to me, upon you. I give my maid into your arms, but when she saw that I had conceived, I was despised in her sight. May the Lord judge between you and me. And Abram said to Sarai, behold, your maid's in your own power. Do with her what is good in your sight. So Sarai treated her harshly, and she fled from her presence. Sarah sent her away, but God sent her back. He met Hagar out in the desert and said, no, you go back and you live with your mistress and you serve her. I would say that's how you spell dysfunctional. If you want to look at a dysfunctional family, Abraham got a dysfunctional family at this point. 13 years passed between the end of chapter 16 and the beginning of chapter 17, because it was 86. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to him. And chapter 17 and verse 1 says, when he was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to Abram and talked to him. I wonder if he even said anything to him for the next 13 years. We don't know. But I bet that wasn't a very happy 13 years. And Abram is 99. That means Sarah would be 90 now. And Sarah, you know, Sarah was a woman of faith, but she had an imperfect faith. Submission was perhaps the rule in most of her life, but not in this case. And I think we can see that bad decisions lead to some pretty painful consequences. Well, it's very important to see that God is, while we are unfaithful sometimes, God is always faithful. In chapter 17, the Lord came back to Abram, and He reaffirmed His promises with more details. He changed Abram's name to Abraham at this point, said He would establish His covenant, and that He would be the father of many nations. But look down in verse 15. He says, then God said to Abram, as for Sarai, your wife, you will not call her name Sarai, but Sarah will be her name. And I will bless her, and indeed I will give you a son by her. And I will bless her, and she shall be the mother of nations, and kings and peoples shall come forth from her. Isn't it amazing? God doesn't despise her, but He honors her. He changes her name, and He says, I will give her children. And you will call her princess. Her name will be, that's what Sarah means, is princess. And from her will come kings and nations. God had a purpose for Sarah that was larger than she ever dreamed of. Verse 16, you know, she will be the mother of nations and kings and peoples. They will come for her. Well, at this point, it wasn't Sarah's faith that floundered a bit, but it was Abraham's. And it says in verse 17, he fell on his face and laughed. And he says in his heart, will a child be born to a man of 100 years old? And will Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? And Abraham said to God, oh, that Ishmael might live before thee. You know, even the best men of faith, lest we think that we can't fall, even the best men of faith have moments when we walk by sight. Or at least there are certain areas where we walk by sight. Sometimes we may have great faith in some areas and feel pretty good about our confidence in the Lord, but there are some areas where we don't really trust Him. And this was something, as far as Abraham was concerned, was just an area of impossibility. There are things that we do for the Lord with great faith, and there are areas we just don't tread into because we think it's impossible for Him to resolve some of those complications. And God emphasizes to Abram here, he says, verse 19, no. He said, but Sarah, your wife, will bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac, and I'll establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant for his descendants to have after him. He says, no, it's going to be Sarah. He made it perfectly clear. If there's any question at all, God says, it will be her that will bear this son. And He gives him the name Isaac, which means He laughs. So it would always remind Abram, when Isaac shows up, that he had laughed at God, that he had doubted that he could do the impossible. Well, Sarah still struggles, just like Abraham did at times, to believe that God could do the impossible. Chapter 18, we turn over to there. Verse 9 through 15, the year before Isaac was to be born, the Lord came to Abram again to make him aware that he was about to fulfill his promise. And he says in verse 9, "Where is Sarah your wife?" And he said, "She's in the tent." And he said, "I'll surely return to you at this time next year. And behold, Sarah your wife shall have a son." And Sarah was listening at the tent door, which was behind him. And now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age, and Sarah was past childbearing. And Sarah laughed to herself and said, "After I become old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also?" And the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh, and saying, 'Shall I indeed bear a child when I am old? Is anything too difficult for the Lord? At the appointed time I will return to you at this time next year, and Sarah shall have a son.' And Sarah denied it, however, saying, 'I didn't laugh,' for she was afraid." And he said, "No, but you did laugh." God comes back, promises Abraham the son, and Sarah's response is that she laughed. Can you blame her? I mean, you know, it's been 25 years she's been waiting for this promise to be fulfilled. She's been hearing this promise reiterated over and over again. Life hasn't been easy for her. She's been following her husband. She's been waiting for God, and it's brought many challenges into her life. And things are probably a lot easier in the land of the Chaldeans, even without a child. At least she was home. Now she's in this foreign land, living in a tent. And she recognizes that she is well beyond the time when women had children by that point. Even if there were points maybe in when she had some hope before this, now she's where she says, "We just don't have children at this age." And it kind of makes me wonder, you know, if God waited deliberately that long for her sake, so that, you know, she would have been absolutely positively sure that it was impossible for her to do this on her own. I'm not sure that God ever spoke to her directly. At one point I thought maybe so, when it says and he said, "No, but you did laugh." I'm not sure if that's God talking to Sarah directly, or Sarah denying that she laughed and Abram talking to her and said, "No, God said that you did laugh." I don't know. But it seems like that you know, she has had to trust in the voice of her husband rather than getting to hear God talk to her directly for the most part of her life. And that would be hard to do. And he's an imperfect prophet at best. So she struggles to believe. She's struggling to believe that God can do the impossible. And then her faith to submit to the Lord is tested again, or submit to her husband. Chapter 20. You have virtually an identical story with the one that we had back in chapter 12, where there was the journey to Egypt, but now it's repeated, only this time they go to another place called Gerar, and Abimelech is the king instead of Pharaoh. And it looks like Abraham hasn't changed his policy. He's still using the same method to protect himself when he goes into distant places. And he tells, you know, Sarah, if you look down in, again when he's talking to Abimelech, in verse 11, Abraham said, "Because I thought surely there was no fear of God in this place, and they'll kill me because of my wife. Besides, she actually is my sister, the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. And it will come about when God calls me to wander from my father's house that I said to her, 'This is the kindness which you will show to me. Everywhere we go, say of me, he is my brother.'" So this is the policy. And Sarah evidently submitted to that. Maybe because it's a half-truth, but obviously it's a lie. Abimelech sure didn't believe it. Or he came to see it was not true. But she had submitted to him again. not thinking of her best interest. Abraham was not looking out for himself. I mean, that's hard. I mean, she would know that, again, here's my husband, and he is struggling with his faith. He is not doing well. She knew his plan was not foolproof. It had failed before when they went to Egypt. The second time, now she's accosted, taken from her family. And it's the year before Isaac is to be born. Her dream, something she would have struggled and have waited for 24 years and snatched out of her hands again. How is God going to fulfill this promise? If you had been Sarah, would you have went with Abraham to Gerar? Would you have done that? We think sometimes that belief is just intellectual, just some commitment to some statements, some doctrines. But you know, the test of belief involves much more than just some confession. It's putting your neck on the line. It's putting yourself at risk. It's doing things that you know put you in a situation where you are not in control, that puts you in a situation where you have to trust God completely. Was anybody caring for Sarah? If she could have raised that question again, is anybody caring for me? Because her husband wasn't, not at the moment. But verse 17 and 18 of chapter 20 says, "And Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maids so that they bore children. For the Lord had closed fast all the wombs of the household of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife." God was watching over her. God was caring for her, even though her husband was not. Well, God kept his promise, chapter 21, because God always keeps his promises. Isaac was born, and Sarah's words are important there. Verse 6, look at Sarah's words in verse 6. She said, "God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh with me." And she said, "Who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age." When she tried to do it her way, 15 years before, what did it bring her? It brought her misery. When God did it his way, it brought her joy. You know, much suffering of men and women that we experience is because we don't submit to God, neither in our roles at home, nor in our roles to the Lord in other ways. And so therefore, much of the joy that we might have is deferred because we won't do things God's way. We do it our way. But God kept His promise. He always keeps His promise. And then think about, just lastly, is the sacrifice of her son. You know, when you get to chapter 22... the story that we tell about Abraham and taking Isaac and going to the mountain to sacrifice him, it's always, the story is told as it relates to Abraham. And we talk about how hard that must have been for him to give up the promised son, how to walk up that mountain, to put him on the altar, to raise the knife, to bring it down. And rightly so, I think that's what God emphasizes in that chapter. Because he wants us to see the parallel between what Abraham was called to do to his son and what God did to his son. And so we should emphasize that. But what about Sarah? How did it affect her? I mean, it was her son too. It was the son that she had waited for 25 years or more, because she always wanted a son, wanted a child. It's a great test of faith to let that son leave her house that day. Maybe she didn't know. Maybe Abraham didn't tell her where he was going. But I can't imagine later when Abraham came back and told her what he'd done, if she didn't know. I don't know how old she was exactly at this point. Isaac was old enough to carry the wood. But the next thing we hear after that great event in chapter 23 was Sarah lived 127 years and she died. And that's where her story comes to an end. But I want to make just a few applications really quick from this. The story of Sarah is important for us to think about as it relates to her, because she illustrates for us some things that we need to make practical application of. She illustrates for us what submission is. When Paul said, "Wives, submit to your husbands in all things," what does that mean? I think Sarah is the model for us. when you say that's just asking too much, when a wife says that's just asking too much, I'm not going there. Look to Sarah, God's model, and ask, have I gone that far? God asks hard things of His servants. We talked about Isaiah and Ezekiel and Jeremiah and Hosea the other night. He asked him hard things. But you know, He asked hard things of Sarah, hard things of women. He asked her to submit completely to Abram, even though he was an imperfect husband at best. Jesus said, take up your cross and follow me. Paul said, I die daily. And Sarah says to women, take up your cross and die daily and submit every day. And that is very hard. But that's what submission is. What submission is not, this story teaches us as well. That it's not taking matters into our own hands. She was a great woman of faith. But it was an imperfect faith. There was times when Sarah decided to take charge. There are other ways to get things done than waiting on the Lord to do it His way. Our society admires that independent spirit, and it pushes it at every point. I want to tell you that is an ungodly spirit. And it's the spirit that did not demonstrate submission in the life of Sarah. What submission is, what submission is not, what submission can produce when we demonstrate it. Well, it brings great joy. When Sarah did do things God's way, she ended up with joy. Isaac arrived, and he was named Laughter. It's a two-edged sword, isn't it? On the negative side, she would always remember that she had laughed at God because she didn't believe He could do it. On the other side, it brought her laughter, it brought her joy, because when she did trust in Him, she received the blessing that He wanted to give her all along. To trust in God, to submit, is to receive joy. When we let God work out His purpose in our life in the way He designed it, the result will be perhaps more than we ever dreamed of. It also teaches us what a lack of submission can bring. In her story, Sarah tried to do it her own way. She took charge. She went forward with her new plan. She got what she wanted, but not really. The story of Ishmael, as we said, led her to misery. When you think about how many homes today are dysfunctional, they're full of fighting and fussing and contention and rivalry because of the failure of the wife to submit. Now, don't get me wrong, we could spend our time very, very profitably today discussing Abraham and his failures, and he did fail. But we're focusing on her this morning and some of the challenges that came to her because of her, the times that she failed. We're taught in our society to fight for our rights. That is one of the greatest things that Americans are taught. Fight for your rights. Don't let anybody push you around. Stand your ground. But I want to say to you, that is exactly the opposite of the way of Jesus Christ. Jesus was just the opposite. He gave up His rights. He accepted injustice. And He went to the cross because of that. That did not receive respect in our society. But in 1 Peter chapter 2, 23 and 24, that's what Jesus did. And you know what submission does in a family? When the husband leads as he ought and the wife submits, or even if he doesn't lead properly but she still submits, it'll bring peace to a family. It'll keep harmony. It'll keep peace because it won't allow fighting. You know what also submission can't see? We learn to submit is to walk by faith, because you just have to trust that God knows what He's doing. You can't always see what God is doing in your obedience. All of these old patriarchs, including Sarah, died. Hebrews chapter 11 says, without inheriting the promises. It says in Hebrews 11 and verse 11, by faith even Sarah herself received ability to conceive even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered Him faithful who had promised. Therefore also, there was born of one man, and him as good as dead, at that, as many descendants as the stars of the heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand which is in the seashore. All of these died in faith without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance and having confessed that they were strangers and aliens on the earth. She never saw that nation. She did get a son, but she never saw that fulfillment of that promise, any of the promise. She never saw the land belonged to Abraham. Even though he took her there, said that's what God promised. She never saw the great nation that he promised to give her. She was called a princess, but she never saw those kings and those, you know, that came from her. And she never saw the promised son. She never saw Jesus born. She never saw all the nations blessed by her son. And so, you know, submission, what submission can't see sometimes is that what God is doing in the bigger picture. God was doing something far bigger than Sarah could see. A Christian woman submits. When she does that, she gives thought that God may be trying to achieve something through her submission far beyond what she can see. Maybe it's in the next generation. Maybe it's in the generation after, long after she's dead. Walking by sight, the woman says, I don't see how this is going to accomplish anything good. But walking by faith, she trusts in God that perhaps He has something in mind that's far beyond her ability to see. There is something that we can see. What we can see and what she can see is that sometime her submission results in the benefit to others. Look, if you would, just real quickly in 1 Peter chapter 3. Submission, many times, is for the benefit of another. You know, shortly before Jesus was arrested, He said, if I be lifted up, all men will be drawn to Me. In John chapter 12 and verse 32. If I am lifted up, all men will be drawn to me. His suffering, Jesus' suffering and submission, was for the benefit of others, not for Himself. And we have an example here in 1 Peter 3 and verse 1 how God fulfills His purpose through the submission of a wife in saving another. He says, in the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives. You see that this is not about her. It's about saving him. This is not about me. We need to say that to ourselves. Husbands need to say that to themselves. Wives need to say that to themselves. This is not about me. God is trying to save him through her obedience. We are so selfish. And when we reason like we do, we are thinking about what's in it for me. We need to realize God is trying to use us as an instrument through which He can do some wonderful things for others as well. What reward does submission bring? Does a woman get anything out of it? Well, the devil says no. The devil will say no. He doesn't care about you. He's not going to give you anything. He has abandoned you. He's given you a role that's unfair. You shouldn't have to put up with that. Did God care about Sarah? Did He value her? He did value her. He cared for her. He rescued her from Egypt. He rescued her from Gerar. He gave her the son that He promised. And now, she's a hero. Now she's a woman that we all look to as the model of what faith and submission is. We remember her for her faith. Did Sarah receive her reward in this life? Not really. Not ultimately. She did receive the son. He made her a promise. He said, I'll make you a king, a princess. You'll be the princess of kings and nations. But she had to look for her reward in another place. Again, Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. It said, all of these died in faith, verse 13. That included Sarah, without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For those who say such things make it clear that they're seeking a country of their own. And if indeed they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them. And so Sarah did receive a reward, and it was worth every bit of the difficulties that came to her. But she had to look ahead to the reward that she received afterwards. Submission has its great reward. Even Jesus, in Philippians 2 and verse 9 through 11, was exalted because of his submissive attitude, and he submitted even to the point of the cross, that he was exalted and set above the heavens so that every knee would bow to him. And now Sarah sits exalted with him in the heavenly places because of her submission to the Lord. Submission also is pits God's wisdom against human wisdom. God said that the wife should submit to her husband. Sometimes somebody, some woman will talk to me and they'll say, "Well, I've tried that. You know, or she'll relate her efforts to save her husband. She'll say, "I told him, I tried to show him, I tried to explain to him." But the question is, did you submit to him? Did you honor him like Sarah did? Somebody says, "Well, that won't work. I don't think it will work." Well, nobody believed that Jesus going to the cross would work either. That appears to be foolishness. But through the foolishness of the message, God saves us. It's a question of trusting God and believing in His wisdom above our own. In whatever areas in life where a wife is not letting her husband take the lead, then she's not trusting in God's wisdom. When she takes matters into her own hands, it's a reflection of trust in oneself and not in God. Sarah's life is countercultural today. Society would call her foolish. But she should hear a different message. Women should hear a different message in the church. Older women should encourage younger women to do what the Bible says. Older women should be the model for younger women. They should discourage them from pursuing society's ideals and point them to Sarah. The submissive wife is a woman who walks by faith and not by sight, looking to the reward. God paid great tribute to Sarah. She died at age 127. Abraham came to mourn and weep for her. God paid tribute to her, leaving her to us as an example of the kind of woman that He's looking for. He listed her in Hebrews chapter 11 alongside of Abraham, saying that she was a woman of faith who trusted in God. The bottom line is, we have to walk by faith. We can't walk by sight. We have to walk upstream against the current thought, even against brethren sometimes who have lost their way. I think the message of Sarah is a powerful message. It's a very challenging message. But it really is a sermon that I could have just taken her name out and probably put Jesus' name in there in many ways and preached the same sermon. That He also submitted Himself in ways to His Father's will. You know, the famous statement in the garden when He said, "Not my will, but thy will be done." Where He gave up all of His rights. And through His submission, God brought salvation to all mankind. And for the person who wants to become a Christian, they will have to walk in His footsteps. They'll have to see that quality that He demonstrated for us, that Jesus demonstrated as He went to the cross, is a quality that He calls every man to have if we'll be a disciple of His. We need to take up our cross daily and follow Him, entrusting ourselves to a faithful Creator who will deliver us in the end. Maybe this morning you want to become a Christian. It's a challenging message. There's a cost to following Jesus. But the reward is great. But it's a reward that we must look to in the future. A reward that's in a heavenly country. A reward that's eternal. Maybe this morning you'll become a Christian, obey Him, be baptized in His name. If we can help you do that, why don't you come forward while we stand and sing our song.